Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to the Red Umbrella, Seeking the Divine Shade. I'm Sarkhil Sharif, also known as Abu Alia, and I'm your host for the show. Now, it's been a while since the last podcast. I hope in this new year that I can get a podcast out every 3 or 4 weeks, God willing. So what's lined up in today's episode of the podcast? Well, in the last podcast, or in the last episode, which was at the end of September last year, we discussed the idea of Islam and progress in terms of society, technology, and civilizational values. We looked at how some people who self-identify as progressive or liberal Muslims wish to reinterpret aspects of Islam, to reform Islam, as in reformulate Islam, in order to bring it in line with current liberal values and dogmas. The idea of that discussion, as hopefully with all the discussions that we'll engage with on the Red Umbrella, was to help us understand the issue and think through it calmly, critically, and holistically, away from the reductionism, cliches, oversimplification, and sound bites that all too many of us are eager to consume. One of life's givens, and I'm sure you'll agree, is that if we wish not to be treated as infants, we need to stop insisting on being fed baby food. We need to stop suckling from the teats of tabloid news and wean ourselves off social media sound bites and move on to solids, onto stuff that has more depth and substance. We need to engage with detail, with nuances, with the shades of grey. Not just in views we find agreeable, but also in attempting to understand those views that might be diametrically opposed to our own. In that episode on Islam and progress, I also briefly touched on the idea of progress in terms of progressing towards God, of how, for Muslims, at the heart of any real and meaningful progress, there must be progress in terms of deepening one's faith and becoming more committed to God. If you haven't listened to that show already, please try to do so. One of the listeners described the episode as something of an eye-opener and heart-opener to them. You don't often hear that phrase, heart-opener, but when you do, hopefully you know something good is going on. So download the podcast and please try to give it a listen, either on your travels to or from work, or in the me time you've set aside for a quiet bit of reflection and introspection, or whenever else is convenient. Okay, so I thought that since the last episode was tilted more towards social concerns and, I suppose, ideological concerns, this episode should be more spiritual. I know spiritual is a bit of a nebulous, fluffy term, which in recent times has been applied to everything from hugging trees to getting lost in a piece of classical music to seeking transcendence by sitting with a piece of art. But by spiritual, I mean trying to engage the spirit, or as the Quran calls it, the Ruh, and connect it to the creator of spirits, in other words, to God. Spirituality, in the sense Islam considers it, is about connecting the heart back to God in loving reverence and submission to Him, to become beloved to God by doing what pleases Him. At-tahabbub ilallah bima yarda. And key to such a spirituality lies in knowing God. So today's episode is called Knowing God is Like Knowing Your Neighbour. Now, as odd as the title might sound to some people, let's explore what I mean. And to help this discussion along, I've broken up today's podcast into 4 segments or chunks. The first of these bite-sized chunks is, 1, we were created to know God and to worship Him. Now, the idea about being created to worship God is, for Muslims, pretty clear. But to say that we were created to know God, well, that's a little less lucid in some people's minds. In fact, there are some that, there are more than a few voices in certain Muslim quarters who would resolutely object to this idea. After all, they say, Isn't the Quran decisively clear about why we were created? Doesn't the Quran clearly teach us in chapter 51, verse 56, Surah Zariyat, verse 56 of the Quran? أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وما خلقت الجن والإنس إلا ليعبدون. I only created jinn and men that they should worship me, is what the Quran says. Yes, undeniably. But here's the point. We can't truly worship God without first knowing Him. The deeper that knowledge of God filters into the heart, the profounder and more meaningful will be the worship of Him. Excuse me. Explaining the celebrated verse just quoted, I only created jinn and men that they should worship me, or that they may worship me. The early Quranic scholar or mufassir, whose name was Mujahid, explained these words of God, that they may worship me, illa liya'budun, to mean that they may know me, illa liya'rifuni. He explained, illa liya'budun, that they may worship me, to mean illa liya'rifuni, that they may know me. And something similar is reported from his teacher, the famous Sahabi, the famous companion, Abdullah ibn Abbas. May Allah be pleased with him. So the link between knowing God and worshipping Him is straightforward, which is that we can't worship God without first knowing something about Him. Thus, whilst for today's atheists, life holds little significance beyond that of the playing out of selfish genes and random genetic mutations, to believers in God and His oneness, by contrast, life is seen as a rich tapestry of signs and an arena of tests that grant us each the opportunity to know God and to then worship Him. The medieval scholar, the classical scholar Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali, in a short essay he wrote on the theme of divine love, he said, and I am, quote, God created creation in order that they may worship Him with love, fear, and hope in Him. God, exalted is He, declared, I created jinn and men only that they may worship me. However, God can only be worshipped after knowing Him. This is why He created the heavens, the earth, and whatever is between them as pointers to His oneness and majesty. God says in the Quran, Allahu alladhi khalaqa sab'a samawatin wa min al-ardi mithlahunna yatanazzalu al-amru baynahunna lita'lamu anna Allah ala kulli shay'in qadir wa anna laha qad ahata bi kulli shay'in ilma. God it is who created the seven heavens and of the earth a similar number. His command descends throughout them, that you may know God has power over everything and that He encompasses all things in knowledge. Chapter 65, verse 12 of the Holy Quran. And that's the end of Ibn Rajab's quote. So here we are told that the whole of creation was created, لِتَعْلَمُوا, that you may know God, know Allah. Know that His command courses throughout creation and that His omnipotence and omniscience envelop all things. This, then, forms the deep wisdom behind why creation was created. To know God. Know He is one, utterly unique, sole Lord, creator and controller of creation. Possessor of utter beauty and perfection, and to know that none has the right to be worshipped except Him. Now, in this connection, there is a well-known hadith frequently cited in Sufi books and literature that says that our Prophet once allegedly said that God said, كُنْتُ كَنْزًا لَا أُعْرَفُ فَأَحْبَبْتُ أَنْ أُعْرَفَ فَخَلَقْتُ خَلْقًا فَأَرَفْتُهُمْ بِي فَأَرَفُونِي. I was a treasure unknown. Then I desired to be known. So I created creation and made myself known. They then knew me. as touching and profound as this statement is, hadith experts and masters, however, declare that this report or this hadith is a chainless forgery. That is to say, these words cannot be genuinely attributed to our Prophet, peace be upon him. Rather, it has been falsely ascribed to him. In his Encyclopedia of Hadith, Forgeries and Fabrications, a book called Al-Asrar al-Marfu'a fi al-Akhbar al-Mawdu'a, Mullah Ali al-Qari, may God have mercy upon him, said about it, and I quote him, Ibn Taymiyyah stated, these aren't the words of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and nor does it have any chain, be it sound or a weak one. And then Mullah Ali al-Qari cites two other hadith masters, Imam al-Zarqashi and Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, who both concur and agree with Ibn Taymiyyah. And then Mullah Ali al-Qari then concludes by saying, and I quote, its overall meaning, however, is sound, and takes its cue from Allah's words, I only created jinn and men that they may worship me. That is to say, that they may know me, as explained by Ibn Abbas, may Allah be pleased with him. End of quotation. Now, whether this opinion is related from Ibn Abbas or from his student Mujahid, the overall meaning of the hadith is sound and is confirmed by the Quran as well as from a whole host of classical scholars. So here's a case where we needn't throw out the baby with the bathwater. So that was our first point, that we have been created to know God and offer him loving submission and worship. The second point, concerning ma'rifah, or knowledge of God. When speaking about Islam's religious ultimate, Allah, God, the language of Islam and of its learned ones often make reference to the term ma'rifatullah, or having ma'rifah of God, of Allah. Now, ma'rifah, which is derived from the Arabic word arafa, to know, or to be acquainted with someone or something, may be translated as knowledge of God. This knowledge or ma'rifah is of varying degrees and tends to refer to knowledge which has been arrived at through reflection and contemplation and then internalized and experienced by the heart and the senses. In other words, ma'rifah is experiential knowledge, sometimes translated as gnosis. The deeper the reflection, the deeper and profounder the ma'rifah. Whilst explaining or elaborating on the following hadith, ta'arraf ila Allahi fil rakha ya'arifka fi shidda, know God in times of prosperity, and he will know you in times of adversity, or literally translated, have ma'rifah of God in times of prosperity, and he will have ma'rifah of you in times of adversity. Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali says, and I quote him again, a person's ma'rifah of his Lord is of two degrees. Firstly, a general ma'rifah that entails acknowledging, affirming and believing in him. This degree of ma'rifah is common to every Muslim. Secondly, a more specific ma'rifah which causes hearts to incline completely to God, become devoted to him, seek intimacy in him, be at peace whenever remembering him, feel shy before him and be in awe of him. This level of ma'rifah is the type around which the true knowers of God, the Arifun, revolve. End of quote. And that's what the believer, above all else, aspires to. Knowing God in such a way that hearts are filled with awe of him, reverence of him, loving submission to him, and intimacy with him. Especially through his beautiful names and his divine acts, in terms of how he has created this enchanted cosmos, which we'll discuss more about shortly. So that was about ma'rifah, or knowledge of God. The third point, knowing God is a bit like knowing your neighbour, and this is the gist of today's podcast. The late Malaysian scholar, in fact, the accomplished philosopher, metaphysician and thinker, Sayyid Muhammad Naqib al-Attas, rahmatul alayhi, may God have mercy upon him, he gave us this wonderful simile about how getting to know God is like getting to know one's neighbour. And I'd like to thank Sheikh Al-Afifi, who's a lecturer in Islamic studies at the Faculty of Theology at Oxford University, for first pointing out this valuable book and thus this valuable simile to me. So Attas writes in his book, Islam and Secularism, that the various levels of getting to know God, and I'll use the term ma'rifah here, may be likened to that of a man and his neighbour who's just recently moved in next door. Initially, the man becomes acquainted with his neighbour in a general sense. He may learn of his name, his vocation, whether he's married or not. He will also learn of his general appearance and be able to recognise him when meeting him on the street. He may even, by asking around, be able to glean other facts about his new neighbour. Yet, whatever facts he does learn about him will be at an indirect, impersonal level, unlikely to stir the heart into having any deep or abiding sense of respect and admiration for him. In fact, beyond acknowledging the neighbour's existence or presence in the locality, his outlook towards him will likely be one of polite indifference. This is similar to the first degree of ma'rifah spoken of by Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali above. Now let us imagine the man decides to know his neighbour directly and introduces himself to him, frequently visits him, socialises with him, and over time forms a sincere and faithful friendship with him. He is now able to see and experience at first hand his neighbour's fine character, kindness, generosity, knowledge, wisdom, compassion, and other virtues which can only be known through direct contact. Such an intimate awareness of his neighbour will eventually evoke in the man a profound respect and admiration for him and a deep abiding love for him. It is probable, or rather guaranteed, that his neighbour will now begin to disclose to him many of his most private and cherished thoughts and share with him many of his most intimate feelings, which could never have been known even with a lifetime's worth of indirect observation or investigation. Rather, this knowledge is only granted to him out of the neighbour's own desire to be more intimately known and from the man abiding by the rules of courteous conduct or adab in seeking to know and draw closer to his neighbour. This is similar to the higher degree of ma'rifah Ibn Rajab spoke of, a ma'rifah or knowing which stirs in the heart a deep love, yearning, reverence and intimacy with the one that is known, as well as the one that is known disclosing secrets and deeper layers of understanding to the one who seeks God. Subhanallah. So, trying to digest and internalize that beautiful simile, let's move on to the fourth and final point of today's podcast, which follows immediately on from this idea of ma'rifah. Point four, how to deepen our ma'rifah of God. How do we deepen our ma'rifah of God? So how can we practically go about cultivating this ma'rifah of God? The short answer to this is given by Ibn al-Qayyim, who simply tells us, and I quote, "In the Quran, Allah invites his servants to attain ma'rifah of him in two ways. One, by contemplating the creation. The other, by meditating upon the Quran and pondering its meanings. The first are his signs that are seen and witnessed. The second, his signs that are read and understood. End of quote by Imam Ibn al-Qayyim or Ibn Qayyim al-Jawziyyah. So, reflecting upon creation and pondering the meanings of the Qur'an are the two most powerful ways in which we can nurture ma'rifah in our hearts. The theory is simple and straightforward. Anyone can understand that. It's the practical side, the actual doing, that requires effort. For without spiritual ambition and exertion, we usually end up only talking the talk, not actually walking the walk. So let's look at those two ways of gaining ma'rifah in a little more detail. Contemplating or reflecting upon Allah's handiwork, on the handiwork of God. And the idea of contemplating and reflecting is given in the Arabic word tafakkur. So tafakkur of God's handiwork within creation enables us, at least to some extent, to admire his wisdom, splendor, and sublime power. This in turn inspires reverence and love of God in human hearts. For the natural world is like a mirror, itself beautiful, while reflecting the even greater beauty of God. If the starry heavens elicit in us a sense of awe, if a newly sprung red rose evokes in us a sense of beauty, if the solemn stillness of an autumn woodland kindles in us a sense of sublimity, then how much more awesome, beautiful, and sublime must the creator of such things be? Appreciating the splendor of the creation and being enchanted by it is, therefore, a means of knowing and glimpsing the still greater splendor of its maker. And yet, it is amazing how many people find it difficult to see God's names and acts scattered throughout the creation and filling up every space. There's nowhere that his names aren't found, nothing in creation except that it points to him. And yet many of us seem rather indifferent to the vast tapestry of divine signs that are all around us. We need to actively appreciate the beauty and sheer wonder of the signs all around us. We need to lift up our gaze and reflect. We need to give our hearts time each day to soak in the enchantment of it all. But above all else, we need to remember that these wonderful signs in the natural world, above us, below us, and around us, are signs, and signs point to something else. So we mustn't get hung up on the signs and be in awe of the signs without being in awe of what each of these signs are pointing to. And they point to their maker, their creator, God, Allah. As for the Quran, in terms of helping us to know God, It depicts a vivid portrayal of who God is, who Allah is, in terms of his names, his attributes, his divine acts, and his essential nature. This so that we can attain a more immediate awareness of him through pondering over his acts and attributes of perfection by which he makes himself known. So when the Quran describes such attributes, like when it says that God is wise, just, majestic, omnipotent, generous, merciful, compassionate, loving, and forgiving, it insists God possesses such qualities in utter perfection. This divine disclosure, so to speak, is, again, aimed at inspiring hearts to incline to Allah, to God, in reverence, awe, and loving submission. Therefore, amidst the dramas of the world, amidst its songs of joys and sorrow, the Quran asks each of us to know their Maker and to live out our lives in conscious awareness of him. Those who worship Allah or God with such an awareness and in accordance with Islam's sacred law or Sharia are led by it to an even deeper awareness. And thus it is that God in his overwhelming generosity and perfect grace, elevates those who are imperfect, weak, and ignorant, yet strive to subdue their lower souls, open their hearts to his light, and seek to know and draw closer to him. We ask you, O God, we ask you, O Allah, to deepen our ma'arifah of you. Fill our hearts with love and awe of you. Grant us sincerity in our worship of you, and not be deprived of your shade. On the day there shall be no shade but yours. Ameen. With that hope, with that prayer, let's wrap up this episode of The Red Umbrella. I hope you benefited from it. Keep listening and sending in your comments. I hope that this podcast has renewed your desire for ma'arifah, for getting to truly, truly know God and draw closer to him. I hope it's given cause for minds to think and for hearts to yearn. I've been your host and presenter, Sarkhil Abu Alia, and remember, the mind is like an umbrella. It's best useful when open. Wassalamu alaikum.